Hello, I'm Michael Kokura. This is number 0218, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0218. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, NASA expert Rod Pyle is back on the show, this time to talk about the accuracy or lack thereof in the new blockbuster film, Gravity.
They've interviewed a couple of NASA astronauts from the shuttle and space station era asking them that exact question. And to a person, they said, you know, I saw a few things that bothered me, but I thought it was a great movie. Now, that said, there is at least one moment where anybody who got through sixth grade science class goes, no. Other than that, it's pretty darn good, and I think we should just go with it and enjoy the ride.
Alana Pratt has tips that can help to affair-proof your marriage. She's an intimacy expert, and she also is known as the Man Whisperer.
What I realized when I began to coach men is they've been emasculated by somebody, by the mom, by the ex-wife or ex-girlfriend, and all they really needed to hear initially anyway to heal their heart was an apology. And I was willing to apologize on behalf of whoever was unconscious and hurt them. And something changed in the men. They could hear. They'd been acknowledged. And then once they felt acknowledged, I could explain that, you know, women, we get scared. We get out of our hearts. We go up to our head, and we can be bitchy and cruel and lash out and try to protect ourselves. It's not condoning our behavior, but it can help them understand why we behave that way.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and James Bond is back in action on this edition of Book Banter in the new thriller Solo, plus some other Bond-related books. So get ready to renew your license to thrill with Bond, James Bond, coming soon on the Stuff File program.
And of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0218 was Mike Kokura, an old friend from my college days in TV and also a colleague at a previous TV station we used to work at back in the day. Thank you very much, Mike, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, Stephen Cohen, eager to make a point that his country of residence, France, is more oppressive to artists than his native South Africa, staged a one-man demonstration at the Eiffel Tower in September. Wearing a bird outfit, tights, and a garter, yeah, he had for some reason tethered a live chicken to his exposed penis with a long ribbon. After Cohen was arrested for indecent exposure, his lawyer complained that her client had been kept in custody too long for such a minor charge. France, she exclaimed, is throwing artists in prison. Really? A live chicken tethered to his penis? This is art? Makes you kind of wonder what art concepts he threw out before he chose this one. That reminds me, by the way, of an old joke about the definition between erotica and pornography. Erotica is when you ever so gently caress your mate with a feather. And pornography is when you use the whole chicken. Yes. Anyway, you wouldn't think this kind of thing would work, but in Grand Falls, New Brunswick, a man there apparently watched a lot of Three Stooges and managed to survive being attacked by a black bear by grabbing its tongue. Gilles Sears said he was walking in his woodlot when the bear ran out of the woods, knocked him down to the ground, and stood over him. His mouth was wide open in front of my face, so the last thing I remember, I had his tongue in my hand, and I didn't want to let it go because he was trying to fight me off, he said. So he was hitting me with his claws, so I says, "If you're going to hurt me, I'm going to hurt you too." You think the bear understood that? Anyway, Sear suffered claw marks to his belly and knee, but managed to escape behind a tree. The bear eventually lost interest. Sear did not have a chance to try poking the bear in the eyes or slapping it or hitting it on the head with a hammer. Not to be sexist, but, you know, a woman would never do that because women just don't get the Three Stooges. Anyway, a French bank apologized after a posting of a photo on Facebook of a squirrel caught hanging upside down by its testicles on a bird feeder. The bank shared the photo on Facebook as part of a marketing campaign for a line of insurance. I've actually seen the photo, and from the squirrel's point of view, it does look awfully painful. Yeah. The photo was accompanied by a slogan, "Because accidents don't just happen to others, insurance will also cover you for any temporary injuries." Many of the bank's 24,000 Facebook followers thought the account had been hacked. When the bank realized followers' reaction, they apologized and took down the photo. "We wanted to make use of the social networks, but we made a mistake. It was a communication error. We've hurt Facebook followers and potential customers, and we regret it," the bank said. Well, all I have to say to the bank is, you know, nuts to you. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a British woman is being told she must replace her late husband's headstone with one that doesn't include a Sudoku puzzle. Now, Angela Robinson received a letter from the town officials in Chester, Cheshire, about 350 kilometers northwest of London, saying the puzzle lowers the standards at the cemetery where Alan Robinson's body is interred. Angela Robinson said the puzzle and equation that appear on the headstone are a tribute to her mathematician husband, who loved completing the puzzles. Alan died in May of 2012. "He was a bit of a fanatic, but this is personal to him. How can they possibly say that what we have put on there is lowering standards?" she told a Mirror newspaper. Her son, Paul, said town officials are being petty. "In what way is this remotely offensive, of concern, or even matters in any way?" he asked. Well, you know, I have to agree with the son on this one. I don't really see what the problem is with a creative headstone like this. It's a good thing, by the way, he was a mathematician and likes Sudoku puzzles and not simple crossword puzzles. Then his family might have wanted to bury him six down and three across. Just saying. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. The movie Gravity is making big bucks at the box office and getting rave reviews, including speculation of Oscar nods. So did Hollywood get the space scenario right? On the line with us right now via Skype to Skype communications from Pasadena, California, is NASA expert Rod Pyle to talk about what's right and some of the big oops moments on the big screen. Hi, Rod.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine. Nice to have you back on the program with us once again.
Oh, it's always fun.
What I find is interesting is the fact that a lot of people are speculating as to what's right and what's wrong in this particular movie. And I'm just wondering, is it even necessary to go there?
Well, that's a really excellent question, you know. And they've interviewed a couple of NASA astronauts from the shuttle and space station era asking them that exact question. And to a person, they said, you know, I saw a few things that bothered me, but I thought it was a great movie. Now, that said, there is at least one moment where anybody who got through sixth grade science class goes, no. Other than that, it's pretty darn good, and I think we should just go with it and enjoy the ride because, you know, I got to give the filmmaker props for just saying, okay, I'm going to make a movie about NASA, which is usually a deal killer in Hollywood, and it's going to be about the space shuttle, which is no longer flying, which is another deal killer, and it's going to star a person who's going to be talking to themselves for an hour. That doesn't happen very often. I think Castaway was the last one with Hanks. So it was a big deal.
It's funny you should say that because I was thinking when I saw this movie being promoted, I'm thinking, this is Castaway in space.
Very good. Except that she's a lot more fun to watch because when she takes off the spacesuit three or four times, every opportunity it seems, rather than wearing the body cooling undergarment they're supposed to wear that looks like a white spider web, she's kind of dressed like Sigourney Weaver was in Aliens, which most of the guys in the audience appreciated. So there you go.
One of the things is that this film has come out, you know, we're talking in the year 2013, and with technology as it is, communication technology as it is, this day and age, everybody's a critic. I mean, one of the things that makes this news these days, astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson went on Twitter after seeing the film to talk about what are some of the things that are wrong in this movie. I don't think there were any astrophysicists around who were capable of doing that to the mass population when 2001 came out or any other space film that was out there in the past.
Well, when 2001 came out, and wasn't that a watershed moment? I mean, even today, if you look at that movie philosophically, it's fascinating. So it's a high watermark there. And technically, the effects still look really good. Then you've got Tom Hanks with Apollo 13, who set the bar very high for technical accuracy. But to your point, 2001, you know, Arthur C. Clarke could have commented, but he wrote the thing. So that's not going to happen. So you're right. I mean, there just weren't that many venues for people to comment on these things then.
Okay, so from your knowledge and your background, being a NASA expert, what were some of the things, without giving it away or spoiling it for those who haven't seen it, what are some of the things that stick out to you in this movie?
Well, just up front, they got the technical details on the machinery down to the last button screw pretty much. And that, like I said, other than Hanks and Apollo 13, that just doesn't happen because most directors and producers just don't really care that much. So this guy obviously cared. So the shuttle was, what little we saw of it, was spot on. Soyuz we saw a lot of. The Chinese version of Soyuz we saw a lot of. So those spacecraft were right there, and they did what they were supposed to do, and they looked great. So if you're used to looking at that stuff, that was very comfortable. There's one kind of overarching thing, which is you've got the space shuttle, and then right over there is the space station, and gosh, not very far from there is the Chinese space station. So they just kind of strap it on and go from one place to the other. George Clooney's got a rocket pack. So we're going to just jet over there because our shuttle's in trouble. Oh, this isn't working out. We'll jet over there. Well, these things are very different orbits. Hubble, where they start, Hubble Space Telescope, is almost 400 miles high. And then you've got the space station, which is about 200 miles, and the shuttle, which is 200 miles. And then the Tiangong Chinese station, which is in a whole different orbital plane at about 200 miles. So to make any of these transitions takes a big tank of gas and a lot of time and a lot of calculations. But, you know, that would be really boring to watch. So rather than make it into a modern Marvels, we'll go ahead and watch this movie and go, yeah, that's great.
So wouldn't that be the equivalent, for instance, of any movie we've ever seen, any detective film or Private Eye, where the Private Eye always seems to find parking where he's going?
Yeah. Yeah, and he never stops to relieve himself. You know, I mean, these guys just go, go, go. So, yeah. You want it cut like a James Bond movie, and that's what they did. There is one other moment, though, where they're hurtling through space, out of control. This is Clooney and Bullock, and they're tethered together. But they're heading for the space station, and they're not sure they're going to be able to grab it as they whiz by. And they're pretty careful with the physics in this movie. You know, every time they did something that was like an EVA, an outside activity in space, the filmmakers are very careful to make sure that these guys bumped and banged around like you're supposed to do, because nothing stops you once you're moving, right? So they get over to the space station, and George Clooney kind of misses his handhold. He says, "Sandra, grab the station." Ryan is her name in the movie. So she grabs, and he hits the end of the tether and kind of rebounds. Now, at that point, neither of them are moving relative to the space station. They're all in orbit, going around at 17,000 miles an hour. But relative to the station, they're just sitting there. But there's some mysterious force that keeps pulling on George Clooney. We don't know whether it's a black hole or anti-love or what, but something. And so we have one of those, you know, leave me, save yourself conversations. Dramatically speaking, they had to find some way to sort of pull the moment out so that they could go back and forth and she could cry a little bit. But, you know, it's one of those things where you go, no, there's nothing left to pull on him. That's bogus. So that's the one big moment. Otherwise, I mean, they did a thing in the space station where a panel shorts out and there's flames in zero G. And I just did a story for space.com about flames in zero G, a video cut. And by gosh, they got them exactly right. So for stuff like that, they really nailed it. So other than that one big and the kind of with the orbital planes, everything else was pretty cool.
I don't want to pick too much on Neil deGrasse Tyson, but he did put himself out there with his Twitters,
yes,
with his tweets, rather, with his tweets. And one of the things he complained about right off the bat, and two of the things really annoyed me about his complaints. One was that the film should be called Zero Gravity, not Gravity. And I'm thinking, you know, the word gravity has more than one meaning.
Yeah. And I think that was what they were going for. Zero gravity kind of doesn't have more than one meaning. And to be really accurate, microgravity just sounds dumb. So what are you going to call it?
No, but even the word gravity itself has more than one meaning. And if you look at it from that perspective, it could be the gravity of the situation that is the title of the movie. Not zero gravity. And the other thing, and he goes on to say that he truly did enjoy the movie. But he goes on to talk about the fact that Sandra Bullock's hair isn't moving the way it would if she were actually out there in space. And I'm thinking, how did he enjoy the movie if he's so concerned about this minutia?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, if you've watched space shuttle footage or space station footage, women's hair does frizz out and it looks really silly. And it's one of those things where you say to yourself, okay, let's just have her pull her hair back and we'll be done with it. So in a lot of it, her hair is pulled back, as I recall. And it's kind of a non-deal. I mean, one of the astronauts watching it also said, you know, her tears are drifting away in zero G. And it was a nice dramatic moment, and there's a couple of great visual effects associated with it. But in reality, they sort of just clog up on your face and sit there because of surface tension. But that's not very nice looking, right? So we don't want to do that. Yeah. There was another moment in the shuttle, and I'm not giving anything away, but there's a couple of dead astronauts sort of floating around, explosive decompression. Now, explosive decompression is one of those things where people look terrified, and all the fluids and gases in your body want to go from inside to the outside, so it's a real mess. In this movie, they just look like they've taken a nap with ice crystals on their face, but how far do you want to push it? I mean, after all, we are kind of ripping up everything NASA owns or owned in orbit, and that's bad enough. We don't want to mess the people up too much.
Exactly. Okay, so you have a knowledge. You are a NASA expert. You saw the film. Bottom line, how do you like it?
I loved it. You know, like I said, there was that one physics moment where I really kind of went, rolled my eyes. And then seconds later, it was gone because there's so much going on in this movie. I mean, there's a reason James Cameron came out and said it's the best space movie I've ever seen. And he's done some great stuff because it is a roller coaster ride. And it's kind of got those sort of multiple fake you out endings that Cameron's so good at. So you sit back and you go, oh, thank goodness no. And then something else happens. So I've seen it twice. I'll see it again because it's just a real romp.
You know, one of the things I find interesting too is with so many people coming out talking about what is inaccurate in the film, all these scientists, it tells me one thing. All of these scientists are going to see the movie. And they're not saying it's bad. They're just saying it's inaccurate, which you could say about any genre of entertainment that you've ever seen. I work as a television news anchor. I love Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom, but it's not a real newsroom.
Yeah, but it's more fun the way he does it, right?
Absolutely.
And this movie, I think, you know, the fact that so many people are commenting on it, as you said, means they're seeing it, and also means that it's really popular and they like it enough to care about that stuff. You didn't hear a lot of recriminations going on about that little movie Apollo 18, which was also kind of cool. Had a few inaccuracies. Was it on the news? People going, well, you know, that didn't work in Apollo 18. No, because it was a tiny movie and went very quickly to video. This thing, I mean, you saw the numbers. They made back their budget in 2 weekends. It's incredible.
Absolutely. You mentioned very quickly, we've got about a minute or so, you mentioned that you were working on, what are you working on?
I'm doing a book on the Curiosity mission specific to just that, which is a lot of fun. And then I'm working on another book about, it's a business book about how NASA's innovated over the years. And that one's really cool because I get to tell all my favorite stories one more time.
Excellent. Rod, it's always a thrill to have you on the program and talk to you about what's real and what's going on and what's happening with NASA. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
You bet. Anytime. Take care.
NASA expert Rod Pyle. He's also the author of Destination Mars, which we talked about the last time he was on the program. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0218, and you'll find links to Rod's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven
from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the Man Whisperer. Plus, we'll also have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nallman. And of course, there is an Idiot of the Day and lots more Stuff File news on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And speaking of stuff, getting right back to it right now, when police arrived at Aisha Clark's Tampa, Florida apartment, they asked if she knew why they were there. She allegedly laughed, picked up her iPad, and showed them her recent posted Instagram picture. It showed her dangling her baby over her apartment balcony. You know, very Michael Jackson-like. Apparently, some of her friends had seen the picture and called the cops who, in light of the evidence she presented, arrested Clark on charges of child neglect. After her arrest, Clark allegedly fumed, "I was mad and I was making a point. I can do what I want to with my baby. Nobody can stop me." You know, you'd think that standing there under arrest in handcuffs might have changed her mind on that nobody can stop me bit, but I guess not. Meanwhile, Mark Ostrovsky, age 51, fought a speeding ticket he received in Aspen, Colorado because he says he was the subject of profiling by police. Statistics show that a red sports car is the number one car that cops go after, he claimed. And so when you drive a red sports car in this town and you live here, you drive very slowly. Ostrovsky, who is described as a multimillionaire, denies he was speeding and consulted a lawyer who advised him to get the approximately six other Ferrari owners in Aspen to come testify about how they're targeted. But that was too difficult for Ostrovsky to coordinate, so he told the judge he would put up $10,000 to have Assistant Police Chief Bill Lynn, who pulled him over, take a lie detector test. The judge denied that request and, based on Ostrovsky's not guilty plea, set a trial date, but that was inconvenient for Ostrovsky's schedule, so he instead pled no contest and will take an online driver course with a $100 administrative fee, thus clearing his $70 ticket. Okay, wait a minute. So he was willing to spend more than $10,000 to get out of a $70 ticket? Apparently, he's making sure nobody profiles him for his intelligence. Again, another story of people with more dollars than cents. Police in Milwaukee, Wisconsin were called to the back of an animal hospital after a man was discovered to be stuck in the building's ductwork. The unnamed 19-year-old man had stripped down to basically nothing and squeezed into a ventilation shaft with a hammer and a flashlight, presumably one in each hand, said police captain Aaron Rapp. He then crawled one direction, assuming that he could get down and into the building, was met with resistance in the form of a shaft narrowing, turned around, somehow missed his entry hole, and slid all the way down the shaft to the ground level located behind the building. And there he sat for 11 hours until officers rescued him. He allegedly admitted to police he was trying to get inside where he might find some drugs. Breaking into the back of an animal hospital, apparently to get drugs. Yeah. You know, don't put him in jail. Make him wear the cone of shame, you know, the one that dogs wear? Make him wear that for a few months. I'm sure that'll set the point in. When you're a criminal, if you don't bring the tools required for your chosen profession, you really do have to improvise and use whatever's around you. So here are three such cases of that. Number one, Abbott Griffin, age 57, was arrested in Toledo, Ohio in August and charged with robbing a Circle K convenience store during which he had allegedly grabbed the clerk and bashed him repeatedly with a Bible. Well, the Lord does work in mysterious ways, And apparently, so do morons. Number two, one resident of a shelter in Seattle was charged in August with assaulting another in a dispute over the volume on a television. It was either too high or too low. And they decided to seek their vengeance by beating the person repeatedly using a tub of butter substitute. Wow. I can't believe it's not butter. And number three, Ms. Honesty Keener. And seriously, who names somebody Honesty when their last name is Keener, too? Honesty Keener, age 37, was convicted in Gloucester County, New Jersey, in August for a 2001 break-in during which she demanded money from the female resident under threat of rubbing her open sores over the resident's skin. Wow, I hope she gets some ointment while she's in prison. That's all I have to say to that. Anyway, on to our last story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have a couple of people here whom you would have to say have reached an all-new level of drunk. Number one, De'Aaron Hearn, age 22, was arrested in Iowa City, Iowa, in October after a traffic officer told him to summon a friend to drive his car home, and Hearn responded by reaching into his pocket, clumsily placing a $20 bill to his ear, and attempting a phone call. How drunk do you have to be when you think a $20 bill is your cell phone? Wow, that's drunk. And number two, in October, with her two children waiting in the car at a Holyoke, Massachusetts Shell gas station, Brenda Diaz, age 26, allegedly attacked the store's slushy machine naked. Naked. I'm assuming she wasn't driving naked. She got undressed at some point in the convenience store. Let's hope. Anyway, she was attacking the store's slushy machine naked before police arrived to taser, pepper spray, and arrest her. Oh, those kids will have fun stories to swap when they go back to school, won't they? Yeah, won't they? What a mom of the year, huh? Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. So many relationships today suffer because people sit back and don't take an active role. Joining us on the program right now is intimacy expert Alana Pratt to talk about ways you can affair-proof your marriage. She joins us on the line from California. Hi, Alana.
Hello, fellow Canadian, although I am on a line from California. Great to be here and support people in spicing up their marriages. And it's not as much work as you think, and it's way more fun than you think.
Now, I said in the introduction, affair proof. Is that really possible?
No, but it's just a really good tag. It's a really good thing to say because we can't control our partner and we can't control life, but we can show up the best we can and give it the best shot. And in my experience coaching for the past 15 years, it really has affair-proofed a lot of marriages. It's turned them around. It saved marriages. And now people are happier than ever. So it does work.
So some of the things that you correct, because I'm assuming we're talking about mistakes people make in marriages, are they the same mistakes that people always make?
For sure. Whether it's a relationship, whether you're dating, or whether it's a marriage, it's pretty much the same thing. So anybody listening is going to be improved by putting these into place. Yeah.
So what are some of the things? And by the way, I understand that you're also known as the man whisperer, which almost sounds dangerous. But anyway.
No, I love it. Doesn't it sound sexy?
Yes, it does.
I really love men. I never knew that I was meant to coach men. I had coached women for 15 years. But what I realized when I began to coach men is they've been emasculated by somebody, by the mom, by the ex-wife or ex-girlfriend. And all they really needed to hear initially, anyways, to heal their heart was an apology. And I was willing to apologize on behalf of whoever was unconscious and hurt them. And something changed in the men. They could hear. They'd been acknowledged. And then once they felt acknowledged, I could explain that, you know, women, we get scared. We get out of our heart. We go up to our head. And we can be bitchy and cruel and lash out and try to protect ourselves. It's not condoning our behavior, but it could help them understand why we behave that way. And I've been able to actually heal a lot of men who have been hurt in divorces or what have you, or things that happened way back in their past, and kind of get back to that, you know, the wisdom in their heart, or that badass kind of noble, sexy, dark guy. Just, you know, in his power again to spice up the marriage, to have the courage to ask somebody out on a date, really transform their lives. It's been quite an honor.
I'm guessing that there are two things that make your job a bit of an uphill battle. One, that guys generally don't share their feelings. They don't want to talk. And two, if a guy's been hurt by a woman, he might not want to talk to one. Do you find that those are things, those are roadblocks or stumbling blocks you have to get past to get to these guys?
No, not at all. It's actually completely the opposite. Guys don't want to tell other guys. But when they actually have a woman who doesn't judge, who is, you know, unconditionally loving, who loves men, it's actually the safe, it's what they've been craving their whole life. Somebody safe, who's that tender, caring energy, who's also fiercely loving, not bitchy or angry, fiercely loving, get your ass off that couch because you're amazing and I believe in you. And I'm also sexy and sensual and a temptress and a muse and I believe in men and I champion men. So it's actually exactly what works and they feel very safe and I get very effective results. Different than men. I can't do what a man can do for a man. That's separate and different and beautiful. But I can do what no man can do for a man as a conscious woman.
Well, you also, I understand, have five practical ways to sort of affair-proof your marriage. So can we go through some of those?
Absolutely. Hit above the belt. You know, anybody that is going to be cruel and hit below the belt or emasculate one another, whether you're the man or the woman, that's not fighting fair. It creates total separation, and you're guaranteeing your way to breaking up or a divorce. Number two, it's another sort of form of hitting below the belt, blame. There's this guy, his name's Glasser. He wrote a book called Choice Theory, and he talks about what brings us together in a relationship or what separates us apart. If you're unwilling to take responsibility for your part in the relationship and all you do is blame the other, it's a guarantee for separation on some level, an affair or a divorce. Number three, you know, it's so simple, but just be nice, be kind, praise. So many of people that have had affairs, be they a man or a woman, the other person actually said, how are you? How was your day? They gave affection. They made them feel important. So please don't downplay praise. Obviously, don't make it inauthentic either, but could you just care a little about your partner? Be a little more curious. Be a little more appreciative of them. Number four, chase the bunny. I mean, like back in the day before you were in the relationship, there was courting going on. So be playful, be a tease, send sexy texts, be the little bunny women, making sure he keeps chasing you. Start having fun again and playfulness in your relationship. Yes, it takes consciousness, it takes practice, it takes perseverance, but hey, anything is going to take energy if we want it to grow. You got to, a plant doesn't just sit there, it needs sunshine and water and fertilizer. Well, same with a relationship, so be willing to put something into it, like this chase the bunny, to keep things going and to affair-proof your marriage. And the last point, there's nothing wrong with jealousy. I believe jealousy is perfect. If you see his eyes wander or her eyes wander, you could give your partner the silent treatment. You could withhold sex. You could totally make them wrong. Or you could say, aha, thank you, sister, or thank you, brother, for making my partner's eyes, you know, wander. What is it in them that is not awake in me, that if I would wake up, maybe it's more of my naughty self, my kinky self, my sexy self, maybe it's my kind self or my curvaceous self. Like, what is it that they've got that I've, you know, it's still asleep in me, that if I woke it up, would wake up the sizzle, the sensuality, and the deep, intimate connection in my relationship and affair-proof your marriage.
These tips that you've given, all five of them sound like such common sense, such simple things to do. Is part of the problem the lifestyle and the speed in which we move around in these days that people forget these things and don't follow through on them, and that's what happens in relationships?
Well, it's a great excuse just to say I'm too busy. I think we actually fall into this sort of entitlement that, you know, we've earned the partner and now we don't need to do anything about it. What if you looked at your, as your partner as the most, you know, most beautiful gift that could leave at any minute? What if you knew today was your last day? What if you knew we were all going to die tomorrow? Wouldn't you just be a little bit more present, a little bit more grateful, a little bit more connected? So don't take your partner for granted and make excuses that I'm too busy or what have you. Treat each day as the gift that it really is, and treat your partner as the gift that they really are, even if they left the toilet seat up, even if she was, you know, forgot to make dinner or burnt it, like whatever. Just, you know, get back to that gratitude and connection and just show up fully, heart splayed wide open, and just, yeah, live, savor, now, please.
Now, I happen to go to your website, which is braveboldandraw.com, which, by the way, sounds like a kick-ass law firm. And I saw the video that you have there, which, by the way, is great. I have to tell you that. It's so positive. So what will people find when they go to your website, braveboldandraw.com?
Well, it's a 21-day telesummit that I'm doing right now, and it is a really, thank you, it's a totally kick-ass, hysterical video, and it's about this conversation. We could sit back in life, we could hide, we could blame, we could do all these things, or we could show up, be ourselves, be brave, be bold, be vulnerable. That's what raw really means. So whatever it is that you're facing in your life, whether it's with your relationship or some new challenge you want to be able to get through, this telesummit is going to give you every tip, tool, and practice and inspiration and empowerment to do it. So sign up. It's completely free. Get on board. We're only on day one today. And it's videos and audios, and it's my way to give back to you.
Excellent. And what, if everything works out, what happens after the 21 days?
Well, if everything, well, that's another whole interview you'll have to ask me for. Peace for my son. I'm going through a very difficult custody situation with my son. So that's my intention. And at the end of 21 days, you'll have what you require to make that brave, bold move in your marriage, in your relationship, in your life, because why wait? I mean, my God, it's now. Show up now in life. It's important just to be you and have as much friggin' fun as possible.
Excellent. People, again, can check the website, which is Brave, Bold, and Raw. And by the way, that's all spelled out, no ampersand in there, braveboldandraw.com. Alana Pratt, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Oh, I had a blast. Thank you, fellow Canadian, and good night to all of you, fellow Canucks, and all my love to you.
Intimacy expert Alana Pratt. Again, you can check out her website at braveboldandraw.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0218, and you'll find the links. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Gridlock may best describe the state of affairs in Washington, D.C. these days, but a new national poll suggests America is not as divided as we may think. The poll is attracting widespread attention because it was jointly conducted by the pollsters used by both the Obama and the Romney campaigns last year. Here's how one expert describes the findings of this bipartisan team, and I quote, "Everything we're told about politics in America today, that there is no middle ground between left and right, blue and red, us and them, is wrong." The pollsters report that a majority of voters, 51%, now make up what they call the new center of American cultural and political life. The common themes among this new center are strong beliefs in fairness and meritocracy. Let's be fair, since a lack of fairness is the root of America's lawsuit problem, this survey provides hope for a solution, if our elected leaders tune in to what the new center is saying. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, Stuart is with us once again, but he's shaken, not stirred. Hello, Mr. Nauman.
Hello, Peter. Before I serve you my vodka martini, I have a little something to say. I have a little announcement.
What's that, sir?
Well, you know, since we started this segment, I've been saying I write for a paper called the West End Times.
Right.
And we find me and all that. Well, guess what? They changed the name of the paper.
Oh, and what are they called now?
The Montreal Times.
The Montreal Times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Think of it this way. Same paper, different name.
I got it. And a new website.
Yeah. Just go to www.mtltimes.ca. And you know, that's where you'll be fine. But, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later. But I thought, you know, just at the offset, you know, I want to sound like that TV promo. It almost sounds like a TV promo. Same paper, different name.
Right.
And speaking of the same, on this edition of Book Banter, one of our favorite heroes is back. Same hero, different story. It's James Bond. He's back. He's having a midlife crisis. That's right. because best-selling British novelist William Boyd is the sixth author to give Secret Agent 007 a literary resurrection, following the likes of Robert Markham, John Gardner, and Jeffrey Deaver, actually. And 60 years since the publication of the first Bond novel, Casino Royale, Boyd has given the British Secret Service agent with the 00 license to kill prefix a fine anniversary tribute with a book called Solo. And the book takes place in 1969 as Bond approaches his 45th birthday. Now this time, he is assigned to travel to the volatile Western African nation of Zanzarim, which is in the middle of a bloody civil war with neighboring country Dahum. This is loosely based on the actual civil war between Nigeria and Biafra during the late 1960s. Now, using the cover of a British journalist for a French press agency, Bond's mission is to find his way into Dahum via Zanzarim and end the civil war by assassinating the warlord Brigadier General Adeka, or as Zan puts it, find a way of making him a less efficient soldier. How succinctly put.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's typical, you know, British civil service type of talk. But the only disadvantage Bond will have for this mission is that he won't be able to carry his trusty Walther PPK pistol or any other sophisticated weaponry from Q Branch. Just some carefully concealed chemicals that are supposed to do the trick. Like, sort of poisonous, you know. Quietly eliminate the enemy, make that less efficient soldier. Now, of course, while in pursuit of Adeka in the jungles of the two warring African nations, Bond is assisted by FS Blessing Ogilvy Grant, MI6's alluring head of the Zanzarim station, and encounters a classic Bond villain, a fanatical Zanzarim army officer Cobus Breed, who not only carries a lust for violence, in which he hangs his dead enemies by their jaws with sharp fish hooks, but also has a horribly disfigured face whose eyes constantly shed tears. Now, William Boyd, who was officially approved by the estate of Bond creator Ian Fleming to write this book, certainly does not disappoint with Solo. He manages to echo the elements that made the Fleming novel such compelling reads for six decades worth of devoted readers. There's plenty of sex and violence and exotic locations, delectable descriptions of Bond enjoying the local cuisine and imbibing the finest liquors, as well as lengthy prose that effectively probes into the tortured yet dedicated psyche of James Bond and what makes him such an effective, troubled, and humanistic spy who's not afraid to utilize his license to kill, yet sometimes does it with some reservations. Now, Solo is a welcome addition to the literary Bond canon, and hopefully William Boyd will get further permission from the Ian Fleming estate to occasionally renew James Bond's license for another dangerous assignment.
So you like this one?
Yeah, I did, actually. It kind of reminded me of, you know, I have the collection of Pan paperbacks. It reminds me of just, you know, cracking the a dog-eared Pan paperback from circa 1963-64 and enjoying those the original Ian Fleming books.
Excellent. So the book now, is... Yes, go ahead.
Well, if you want to enjoy Bond, I can easily recommend the Ian Fleming novels, but here's a little bit of a different tack. I decide to recommend License Renewed, which was the second of the Bond Resurrection novels written by John Gardner. The first one written by John Gardner was published in 1981. And also, John Pearson did a couple of books, one called James Bond, the Authorized Biography, so you get to know a bit of the quote-unquote background of James Bond. And also, what I consider a great companion volume, which was he published in 1966, called The Life of Ian Fleming, which is an excellent biography, and I highly recommend both books.
What about the Benson books?
The Benson books aren't bad. I think at the time I thought it was, you know, the formula got a little bit tired, but they're not bad, actually. But Jeffrey Deaver did a good job with the Bond book that he was assigned to write, but I think William Boyd really captured the essence of those classic Ian Fleming novels that were published 60 years ago.
Well, is part of the fact that he took Bond back into the 60s as opposed to bringing him into present day?
Yeah, I think maybe just keep Bond in the era that he belongs in.
So the book is called?
It's called Solo by William Boyd. It's published by HarperCollins, and it's $29.99.
And Stuart, I understand that you're working for the same paper, but the name has changed?
Yes, that's right. The license has been renewed. Well, the title has, sort of. It's called the Montreal Times.
And people can find you how, sir?
Well, you could read me in print in the Montreal Times, or if you can't read me in print, you can read me online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart Nullman.
da 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 da.
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do, of course, have an idiot of the day coming your way in a matter of moments, but a few more Stuff File stories to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And if you hear this program on a regular basis, you know that I often talk about the idiocy that is known as zero tolerance in some schools, primarily in the United States, where they have these zero tolerance policies, and it leads to all kinds of idiotic situations dealing with the sad nanny state that we sometimes live in. Well, here's another sad nanny state story of political correctness gone mad, and I seriously have to ask, when will this madness simply stop? Jordan Bennett, age 8, has been suspended from Harmony Community School in Osceola County, Florida, for playing cops and robbers with another boy. Now, because of the guns, school officials say he had nothing in his hand, however. You see, he didn't have any guns. They were pretend guns. It was a finger gun. You know how you used to, as a kid, point a finger at someone and go bang? That's basically it. Yes, it was a finger gun, a pretend gun, said his mother, Bonnie. He didn't threaten anyone with violence. He didn't utter words that were inappropriate. He made the sound and used his finger, and that was it. His mother is outraged that the boy is now labeled a violent offender and promises to take the case to court if necessary to clear his record. But school officials won't relent, saying the school's code of conduct prohibits students from playing with invisible guns. Invisible guns. That's their wording. They actually said, you can't play with invisible guns. You know, again, unfair, since school officials are operating under, I guess, invisible qualifications. And again, this is sad, really sad. I had visions of making the entire school administration this week's idiot of the day because they're just that stupid, but I'm sorry. You know, this zero tolerance madness has become a pandemic. It can't be that there are these many people in educational administrations that are just that out to lunch. I'm beginning to wonder what kind of damage was done to these people in their childhood for them to have turned out this way, because, I mean, there's got to be an answer somewhere. And, oh Lord, we're not finished with this. Here's another winner story from another school. Cody Chitwood, age 17, a senior at Lassiter High School in Marietta, Georgia, loves to fish. Now, sometimes, twice a week, he goes fishing, he says. After fishing at his favorite spot, he left his poles and tackle box in his car, which he then drove to school. Now, that day, school officials ordered a dog search of the parking lot, which they do a couple of times a year during the school year. The dog triggered on Chitwood's car, and it was searched. Inside the tackle box, police found 3 knives, including one designed to fillet fish and a fourth in the driver's door pocket. Chitwood says, with the blessing of school authorities, the police officer told him that, quote, instead of making a scene out of you, we'll put a warrant out for you and you can turn yourself in at the jail. Really? Really? Criminal charges? You got it. Carrying a weapon in a school safety zone, which apparently is a felony. Now, Chitwood was also suspended for 10 days by Principal Chris Ritchie under the school's zero-tolerance weapons policy. The family has hired an attorney, good for them, since a felony conviction will derail Chitwood's career plans. After graduation, he had planned to join the U.S. Air Force. He wouldn't have been caught at school had officials, by the way, not been going on a fishing expedition of their own. I just don't get it. Anyway, enough with those. David Jordan, age 36, claimed that he was aiming at a squirrel when he fired an arrow at a second-floor fresh air exercise area at the Whatcom County Jail in Bellingham, Washington. He had no explanation as to why squirrel hunting requires attaching marijuana to an arrow, said Sheriff Bill Elfo. But the sheriff pointed out that if fired at the right angle, an arrow would be able to get through the screen covering the top of the recreation area. Jordan, however, seems to have missed both squirrel and screen, and the arrow, with a few grams of pot in a baggie attached to it, landed on the roof. He was arrested on suspicion of introducing contraband to a corrections facility, resisting arrest, and obstructing law enforcement. He was held in a cell on the first floor, where apparently arrows can't reach, but squirrels can. And a 21-year-old Port McNichol, Ontario man is facing a drug charge after a knapsack containing about a pound of marijuana was found on a Barrie Transport bus. According to Barrie police, a city bus driver located a backpack that had been left behind by a passenger on a Sunday afternoon at around 3:30 p.m., and when he tried to determine who owned the bag, found the marijuana. A short time later, police say the knapsack owner called Barrie Transport looking to retrieve his property, and when he came to claim it, he was met by police. The man was charged with possession for the purpose of trafficking. Dude, if you leave a knapsack with a pound of dope in it on a bus, just chalk it up to a loss and walk away, okay? Don't come back looking for it. That's just my tip of the day to you. Here's another story I want to share with you on the Stuff File program. Lisa Moorer, age 52, was driving her ice cream truck in James Island, South Carolina, when she heard shouting. Now, thinking it was kids trying to get her business, she stopped and then saw that it wasn't the kids shouting. It was a man with a gun. He came flying out of nowhere from his backyard screaming, Moorer said. He was very upset. Richard Hill, age 59, allegedly ran out with the gun after he believed the truck had violated the neighborhood's posted no soliciting sign. Get the bleep out of here, Hill allegedly yelled. There is no bleeping soliciting in this neighborhood. Hill was arrested and charged with pointing and presenting a firearm. Moorer isn't sure what really motivated Hill to act the way he did. You don't know why people do what they do, she says. Who knows? Maybe his mother didn't buy him ice cream when he was a kid. That's a very good point. He took the, I guess, ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream a little bit too literally, I think, in this case. Or perhaps he snapped after hearing that ice cream truck song that usually plays. You know, that song does have a sort of demonic sound to it. I guess maybe he didn't like the bell on the truck. I don't know. Anyway, some people you just can't please. I think we're at a racetrack here on this program. You know what we can do right now? Oh, yes, we still have one thing to share with you. Yes, boys and girls, it is time for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Sharon Cunningham, a surveillance operator at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut, noticed something strange on her security monitors. A man who resembled a known cheater apparently marking cards. After reviewing video footage, she alleges the man, a fellow by the name of Bruce Kalashi, was putting ink on the cards that was only visible on black and white video or through special contact lenses that Bruce was wearing. Cunningham called the police and they arrested him. According to the arresting report, Kalashi stated he was there at the casino in an attempt to raise bond for his Louisiana arrest warrant. You see, Bruce was scheduled to turn himself in to a Baton Rouge, Louisiana authority to face charges, wait for it, that he was using invisible ink to mark cards at a casino. Man. Well, he was identified as a cheater, just not a smart cheater. Because, seriously, why would someone who is already facing charges for marking cards at a casino go to another casino to cheat in the hopes of scamming enough money to raise bail money on the first charge? Wow, one reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0218. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0218. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it for this week's show. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.